Please be seated. The final argument this morning is case number 2014-516, Board of Education of Warrensville Heights City School District versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision. For the appellant, Mr. Konzer.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Thomas A. Konzer. I'm co-counsel for the Board of Education of the Warrensville Heights City School District. I would request permission to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Just watch your time.
Thank you. Your Honor, this is an appeal from the Board of Tax Appeals, which set the value of real estate for real estate tax purposes for the tax lien date of January 1, 2010. In that case, evidence was presented to the Board of Tax Appeals that the property sold in May of 2010 for $43 million. Despite this sale, the Board of Tax Appeals ignored the sale completely for the sole reason that the sale was conducted under the supervision of a bankruptcy court proceeding. The issue in this case is what evidence that type of sale should have in setting real estate tax values. It is the position of the Board of Education that such a sale must be considered by the Board of Tax Appeals. It cannot just dismiss it because it occurred in a bankruptcy proceeding.
So you do not believe that the language, the forced sale provision, if it were in 5713.04, applies to bankruptcy sales?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because in this case, this was not a forced sale. This was a Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceeding. It was a voluntary Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceeding. The debtor chose to use the bankruptcy laws to assist it in reorganizing its business. It was a voluntary decision by the debtor to use these laws to help it maximize the value of its business. In a Chapter 11 proceeding, the debtor does not have to sell its property. It presents a plan of reorganization. That can include keeping all of its property and just reorganizing debt. It can include selling some of its property. In this particular case, the debtor voluntarily chose, after voluntarily filing the Chapter 11 proceeding, to sell this property. It was not a forced sale in any way, shape, or form. Even if the BTA could reject it if it was a forced sale, the BTA made no finding that it was a forced sale. It just said, we're not considering any sales that occur in a bankruptcy setting, and that in itself was wrong.
Well, assuming this court construes 5713.04 to include bankruptcy sales in the forced sale provision, then it seems to me that part of what you're talking about is whether the BTA even considered whether that presumption against using that as evidence of true value was rebutted here. So it seems like you could be arguing this one of two ways. Either bankruptcy sales don't fall under this statutory provision, this forced sale provision at all, if they're under this particular chapter in a voluntary reorganization, or if this court believes that they do, that here that presumption against using that as evidence of value is rebutted?
The evidence would have, in this case, would have rebutted any presumption that this was a forced sale because of the nature of the sale and the evidence presented. This was presented in a Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceeding. And as this court recently held in the Olentangy School District case, if a sale is, even an auction sale, should be considered by the BTA to set value if it is shown that the sale is voluntary, not forced, it is recent, and it is arm's length. In this particular case, the BTA specifically found that the sale was recent, and I think they had to find that since it was only 4 months after the tax lien date. The evidence showed that it was a voluntary sale. As I indicated previously, the filing of the Chapter 11 proceeding was a voluntary decision by the debtor. The plan to sell this asset was a voluntary decision by the debtor in an effort to maximize the value of its business and increase the debtor's ability to carry on the business. The debtor was free to sell or not sell this property. It chose to sell it in its plan of reorganization. The evidence also established the other elements of the of a voluntary arm's length sale. This sale was presented to the Chapter 11 Bankruptcy Court in Delaware, and the property the now property owner, Harris Ohio Acquisition Company, was a party to those proceedings. And that bankruptcy court specifically found, and this was in the record, that the property was widely marketed both before and after the bankruptcy proceeding. So there was an effort to market this to a wide number of people. There was an auction conducted after a price was set with Harris, at which parties could offer even more. And so there was another attempt to maximize the value of this property. The court found that the purchase price was fair and reasonable, and that the transaction was entered into without collusion or fraud from any of the parties. The court specifically found that it was an arm's length sale.
Mr. Konzer, are those findings that a bankruptcy court has to make before approving any sale that occurs? I mean, are those findings effectively going to be made any time a bankruptcy court is saying this sale is okay for this reorganization?
In this particular, for a reorganization like this?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they do have to make that finding to approve the sale.
Okay, so this goes back to your point that sales occurring under this chapter of the bankruptcy code and voluntary reorganizations really are voluntary and are at arm's length as opposed to others.
Yes. Okay. It's the court also found that the sale demonstrated sound business judgment. So this wasn't a fire sale where they were just trying to get rid of property. They were trying to maximize the value of the property to assist in its reorganization.
What about the bankruptcy court statement that we need to consummate this sale quickly or they may lose money?
Well, that happens in many commercial transactions. You have a window of opportunity to sell property. In this particular case, this property has some unique value because of its potential to be used for gambling in the future.
Wouldn't that make its value go up, not down?
That would make it go up, but there was also the situation where it was uncertain as to whether or not gambling would be permitted. So if you wait a month and then we find out that gambling is not going to be permitted, then the property value is going to go down. So the court looked at all of that. They recognized the need to sell, but they also said this was sound business judgment to enter into this deal and to do it now. Harrah's own appraiser, and there's issues about whether the appraiser should have even been considered since there was a recent sale, but Harrah's own appraiser said this was an arm's length transaction. The buyer of the property voluntarily agreed to pay $43 million for the property. He didn't have to pay that. Nobody forced them to buy the property. They looked at this piece of land. They looked at the ability to perhaps conduct video lottery terminals on it in the future, and they said, this is worth $43 million to us. And they paid that amount of money. After negotiations, because they initially submitted an $89 million offer that was contingent on getting video lottery terminals. When that wasn't happening, they submitted a new offer, which was a lower price. So it was an arm's length transaction. It was unrebutted. This sale was voluntary, this sale was arm's length, and it was recent. And the Board of Tax Appeals should have considered this sale when valuing the property. Furthermore, Harris, in response to the sale, was arguing that the property sale price included personal property. But as this court has long held, when personal property and real estate are sold together in a single transaction, the party who wishes to allocate a portion of that purchase price to the personal property has the obligation and the burden of establishing how much of that purchase price should go to the personal property. In this particular case, the property owner's representative, Catherine Floyd, came to the Board of Tax Appeals And when asked what the allocation to personal property was, she said, I didn't bring those numbers with me today. She chose not to disclose how they allocated the value to personal property. And there was no allocation in the sales agreement. The sales agreement had some vague general language about contracts and leases and furniture and fixtures transferring, but nothing describing specifically what transferred and what that value was. And there was no evidence presented by the property owner of that in any way, shape, or form. Even the appraiser did not testify to the value of the personal property that transferred.
So your argument about allocation really rests on the burden and that question. You're not arguing that the only thing that was transferred here was real property.
I think I don't know, because they never presented what was transferred other than real property. There was some vague statements in a sale contract, which generally occurs when you're dealing with a business purchase, a kind of a catch-all phrase, anything else that's there transfers also. But the property owner never said what it was that transferred. The appraiser attempted to allocate 65% of the purchase price to video lottery, gaming license, and horse race license. But those didn't transfer in this deal. You can't transfer a horse race license. So they weren't paying for the horse race license. They were paying for this property on which they could conduct horse racing. They were paying for this property on which they could conduct, possibly in the future, video lottery terminals. But they weren't paying for those licenses.
I expect that Harris is going to agree that the 65% wasn't for payment for those licenses or permits, since they couldn't be transferred. But I believe their appraiser suggested it was for the hope of acquiring those licenses. What's your response to that argument, that 65% of this money was for hope?
That occurs in every commercial real estate transaction. If I'm going to buy commercial property, I'm buying it with the hope that I can make money in the future. But I don't, you know, the portion of what I pay for that property is what I'm paying for the property. A portion of that price isn't the value of my hope. And if it was the value of my hope, it's not something that I'm buying from the seller. It's much like if I want to go out and put up a factory, I'm going to buy property that is zoned for industrial use. And I'm going to pay more for that property than I would for residential property, because I can't put my factory on the residential property. And I'm going to pay for that industrial property based on my hope of what I can make in the future for it. But I'm still buying the property. I'm not paying for my hope of making a profit 10 years from now or next year. I'm paying for that property because I need that property to conduct my business. The same case here. There were only 7 locations in Ohio that were likely to be authorized to have video lottery terminals. Therefore, the value of those properties went up because they were very limited. And Harrah's wanted to have the ability to conduct video lottery terminals. So they had to buy one of those properties. And they had to pay $43 million to get this property because the other properties weren't on the market. Thank you.
Mr. Jones, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Your Honor, may it please the court, Paul Jones on behalf of Harrah's Ohio Acquisition Company, LLC, the taxpayer in this case. Under this court's standard of review, the court must find the decision by the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals was unreasonable or unlawful, and it was neither. First, there was more than sufficient evidence in the record to support the board's conclusion to disregard the bankruptcy sale of the Thistledown Racetrack business, not just the real estate, and approve the real estate value in the appraisal. Its conclusion, therefore, was entirely reasonable and supportable. Second, the decision was lawful. There is a long line of authority of the board and courts that support the decision to disregard a distressed sale, such as a bankruptcy sale in this case, which was also an auction sale, and rely instead on other evidence, which in this case was an independent appraisal provided by the taxpayer. In terms of what is reasonable, the real estate is comprised of 128 acres of land in an area surrounded by blight. As the appraiser notes, there's a vacant mall, a vacant and boarded hotel, a closed gas station surrounding this property. It's comprised of improvements that were built in the 1950s, barns, stables, and an outdated grandstand. And what is more reasonable? That real estate itself is worth $13.8 million, or that for some reason a gaming company would buy just that real estate for $43 million. As was established in the record, the $43 million was the purchase of the Thistledown Racetrack business. They were paying for all of the assets as detailed in the purchase agreement in section 2.1. Mr. Konzer mentioned that there was general statements about the assets. In section 2.1 of the purchase agreement, there's a long list of very specific assets in addition to just real estate.
What do you make about the argument that Harrah's didn't present any argument about the specific numbers to be allocated to any of those?
Okay, in
assets.
Terms of an allocation, I understand the point that there are cases where, and the fact patterns are a little bit more simple, the case about the personal property and real property being sold together. There is a notion in that case that because the taxpayer didn't provide an allocation at the time with corroborating evidence, that the allocation that the taxpayer wanted could not be affirmed. However, in this case, there was no allocation provided by the taxpayer in terms of their books and records or their accounting, but there is evidence of how this should be allocated. We're not asking for $0, but in the limited warranty deed, it says zero consideration was paid for the real estate and that there was no arm's length sale. Also, in the appraisal, there's a balance sheet.
Let me back you up for 1 second. Can you point me to where in the record the limited warranty deed is?
It would be included in the, it's part of the County Board of Revision record evidence. Was submitted by the owner as Exhibit A in the county record.
Okay. Thank you.
And the limited warranty deed states zero consideration paid, and when it says arm's length sale, it also interestingly says no. In addition, in the appraisal, there is discussion of the balance sheet in terms of how the owner, Harrah's, allocated the real estate on its books. And again, that's just a balance sheet allocation, but it shows that the value on the books relevant to the land and improvements was $4,654,936. The balance sheet itself is also in the County Board of Revision record, and then the appraisal, that balance sheet is referenced.
Is this Mr. Sangre's appraisal?
Mr. Sangre's appraisal, yes, Your Honor. There's a summary of the balance sheet on page B32 of Mr. Sangre's appraisal. Mr. Sangre also mentions elsewhere in the report that for books and records purposes, 48.5% of the total assets to land, property, and equipment were allocated. And so that's basically the $5,600,000 referenced on B32 of the $11 million or so that was allocated on books and records. So there is some evidence of how the taxpayer accounted for it on their balance sheet. But the more important point is there's independent appraisal evidence in the record that says how much the real estate is worth. And so I understand there's this concept of possibly looking at a taxpayer's allocation, but even in those cases, the courts have said you must also have corroborating evidence or something independent to prove that allocation. Because an owner could come in and allocate however they want without really regard to market value. In this case, the taxpayer had an MAI appraiser who specializes in entertainment facilities say the real estate itself at this property is worth $13.8 million. And so while that's not a taxpayer's allocation, that provides plenty of evidence in the record as to how the real estate component of this should be valued without regard to the, in context of the full $43 million. There is a case as well that I would note for the board, because I mentioned the cases that were spoken about earlier were really more simplified fact patterns where it's just personal property and real estate, whereas in this case we have a purchase agreement that details the sale of an entire racetrack business, and that's Consolidated Aluminum, and it says where, as well as subpoena, where subpoena says where complexities like occur in Consolidated Aluminum, at that point the court may look, or the BTA may look at appraisal evidence in addition to whatever is provided at the time regarding the allocation. Another point that is in dispute in this case is the continued notion by the school board that the purchaser in this case was only acquiring the real estate. As mentioned, the purchase agreement details that it was the sale of a racetrack business, and the real estate component of that has been provided in the allocation by the in the appraisal by Mr. Sangre. I'd also like to address Mr. Conzer's discussion of the whether this sale should be regarded in terms of Ohio law due to the bankruptcy sale. Mr. Conzer suggests that this sale was a valid arm's length sale for Ohio property tax law purposes, which it is not. Ohio law states that the sale must be voluntary, both parties acting in their self-interest, and thirdly, that it be an open marketed transaction. In this case, while the seller may have sought bankruptcy on its own voluntarily, once it was in a bankruptcy proceeding, it was not in control of every move it made. It was being supervised by the bankruptcy court, and in order to sell the assets, had to have their approval. So this is not a situation like you have in, for example, the Countrywide, where Countrywide is selling the property. Trying to find the case where it's a bank that's in control of its own destiny. Here you have supervision by the bankruptcy court, and it's subject to their orders. It also had duties to its creditors, so it was not able to act in its own self-interest. It was acting in the interest of the creditors. It wasn't, again, in control of its own destiny. And in terms of the open market, while the property was marketed in terms of sale, there were only three bidders at that initial sale, and ultimately, those three bidders, there's discussion in the bankruptcy court order about this attempt to maximize the value. Ultimately, it was Harrah's who closed the second transaction, the one that actually closed in May of 2010.
Counsel. I guess where I tend to get stuck in thinking through this issue is ordinarily isn't the court's concern about values or the price being artificially depressed by the mm-hmm. fact that a proceeding might be under bankruptcy or a for sale or an auction. Wouldn't mm-hmm. the concern be that the value is too low? That's not the accurate value. Whereas here, the value was arguably higher than what you're saying it is. Mm-hmm. So I guess I don't see how the ordinary concerns apply.
Whether this sale, from the taxpayer's perspective, I understand from a taxpayer's perspective.
I mean, ordinarily, if a seller is under pressure to sell quickly and we're concerned about him not being typically motivated, mm-hmm. he might settle for less. Whereas here we're saying, oh, no, $43 million is too high for this property.
Okay. I understand. So in a typical scenario, the taxpayer is seeking a foreclosure, it bought a property out of foreclosure or some sort of distressed sale, and they want that lower value because it was a distressed sale. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's the school board arguing for the distressed sale value. The explanation in this case for that is that the $43 million represents much more than the real estate, because what they purchased was the entire horse track business. And one point that I was heading toward earlier in terms of the purchase agreement, not only does it detail all of those assets, it also lists in specific sections that the sale was contingent on transfer of those racetrack permits. So while they were not transferred at the time, because as Mr. Consler correctly noted, the transfer, the license themselves can't be sold. They're subject to the Ohio Gaming Commission approval. The purchase agreement specifically states that this whole deal that closed on May 25th, 2010, didn't actually close until July 2010, when the racing approvals had been confirmed. So while they weren't transferred, the deal was contingent on that. That's how important the racetrack permits were
to the
buyer.
So the contingency on that transfer was still in that May contract?
Yes. In May, the May 25, 2010 purchase agreement, and it's in, and I have the sections here. So in the purchase agreement, it's Article 6, Conditions to Closing, page 44. Conditions for the purchaser in section 6.1. And this is cited in the brief. I believe it's in the appellant's supplement, pages 273 and 274. But in any event, the purchase agreement is in the record a couple of different times. The May 25th, 2010 purchase agreement, conditions to closing, section 6.1E, it states, all racing approvals shall have been obtained. When you go to the definition section of racing approvals, it says racing approvals means all licenses, permits, approvals, authorizations, registrations, findings of suitability, franchises, entitlements, waivers, and exemptions issued by the racing authority, which of course is the Ohio, defined as the Ohio State Racing Commission.
So it was only the VLT contingency that dropped out between September and May.
Correct.
Okay.
Which goes to this concept that the appraiser did discuss of the hope of gaining VLT license. But the racetrack permits, as Mr. Consler stated, were essential. At that time, the expectation was, the anticipation was, it would only be the 7 horse tracks that would have the opportunity to install VLT lottery terminals. And so the racetracks permits were the key, and that's Mr. Sangre's testimony as well, and he discusses this in detail in the appraisal report. And the specific language obviously is in section 6.1, but you'll also see in sections 4.11 and 4.12, pages 42 and pages 43 of the purchase agreement, that the seller was required to cooperate and make sure that the racing, the racetrack permits were transferred, which they were, and therefore you have the limited warranty deed issued July 28th of 2010. So the final consummation of the transaction happens in July after the racing approvals had occurred. Had they not, there was no interest in the real estate. The interest, the $43 million was paid for the racetrack business to have that opportunity for VLT. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Consler, you have reserved 1 minute and 43 seconds for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly on a couple of points. Harrah's voluntarily paid $43 million for this real property. Okay. No one forced them to do that. It was a totally voluntary sale. It is true that they wanted to have this property so that they could operate video lottery terminals. And they knew there were only seven locations in the state of Ohio where this was likely to occur. And those seven locations were horse race locations. That's why they made this purchase contingent on obtaining the horse race licenses in the future. But they weren't buying those licenses. They cannot, under Ohio law, buy those licenses. This is just as if I bought commercial property and I said to the owner, I'll pay you $43 million for this property if I'm able to get it rezoned so that I can put a factory on it. Once the rezoning occurs, I've bought the property, I paid the owner $43 million because the value of that property with the rezoning is $43 million. Same thing here. When I'm willing to pay $43 million for this property, if in the future I can get a racetrack license for it. I'm not paying you for the racetrack license. I'm paying you for the property because I need this property to operate the racetrack. You're paying $43 million for the property, not for the license. Similarly, if I would want to open a factory and I'll say, I'll buy this property because I'm going to open a factory, but I've got to make it contingent on getting EPA permits. I'm not paying for the EPA permits, I'm paying for the property. In reality, the law has to make sense. And if someone voluntarily pays $43 million for a piece of property, it is absurd to say that that property is only worth $13 million. Such a decision brings the law into disrespect and should not be made by this court. Thank you.
Thank you. The case will be submitted and the court will advise the parties of its decision.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.